Opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro with Chef Tal and Mrs. Chef Krista DiMercurio, my beautiful wife sitting across from me.
And
yeah, so Cooking Like a Pro is where you're at, and thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you keeping us on your dial. We are at KCNR 1460 AM, and again, if you may find us on 96.5 FM, and it's a live call-in show, so you can call in and ask a cooking question, anything related to cooking. We will certainly give it our best shot. That's a local number, 530-605-4567. Again, 605-4567. So Cooking Like a Pro. So, you know, we're looking at what's available out there, like we've been doing since we started a couple weeks ago. And, again, we do appreciate your participation as well. But, you know, head down to the farmer's market and see what they got. Last week we did, what was it?
Cucumbers and tomatoes. We did a gazpacho.
Oh yeah, that gazpacho was good. It's hard when you're a chef to make a little bit. So we're still eating the last little bit of that. As long as your refrigerator is cold enough, you're fine on the shelf life on that one. But we're going to do peaches and strawberries because they're just so luscious. So if you'd like to ask a question, give us a call. Again, 530-605-4567, or just listen up and we will be chatting about those. So the fresh update. All right. Peaches. So, there's a number of things you can obviously do with peaches. You don't really want to do a lot with them because they're just one of those ingredients that really stands out on its own. So if anything, you want to use it not as a component cooking. When we talk about component cooking, we're talking about adding flavors together that don't necessarily match. They're basically different components. What you want to do is you want to come up with something that is going to match, something that's going to marry, something that's going to, you know, to form a good bond when you talk about your flavor profile. So that's one of the things that we're going to be chatting about. And I have a couple recipes we're going to share also. We will get these on to our webpage. Krista, where do they find, okay, as I'm rattling off recipes, they don't necessarily need, first off, it's 5 o'clock. If you're driving, don't be writing these down. But where can they go and get those?
Our main website is culinarilyyours.net. And if you can't remember that, just remember what our show is called, CookingLikeAProPodcast.net.
And you pointed that out to me. Cooking Like a Pro spells CLAP. C-L-A-P.
Clap.
Like clapping your hands.
That's how you remember. CookingLikeAProPodcast.net. And you can text us questions from that page.
Questions. There you go. Well, if you want to go online and do that, please feel free. But yeah, so the peach is the thing that I've noticed is that they stand alone very well, by themselves, but you do want to make sure that it's a list of ingredients which are harmonious. And I'm going to start off with a strange one. My Aunt Nadir had given me a recipe. She was a really good cook. Everyone in my family, really good cooks. But she gave me this recipe and it's strange. And I bring it up because I've used it so many times. And it's a wonderful recipe and it's a great combination of flavors, but it sure doesn't sound like it would be. But peaches is one of those items that you can put in. It's a peach spinach salad. Peach spinach salad. So what we're going to use, and also you can use, even we're going to be talking about strawberries. Strawberries works as well. But let's go and give the ingredients on that. So what it is you get your fresh spinach and you have avocado, banana, and strawberry. And then you can replace again the strawberry with peaches and that gets a poppy seed dressing. Actually, we call that a dressing. It's a onion poppy seed sugar dressing. It's a great dressing, but it's just one of those combinations. And I know we talked about this last week that there are those flavor combinations that you just want to write down. Get yourself a pad of paper, write them down. Certain things that you will come across, or you've already come across, or maybe some you'll pick up here, that that will just say, wow, that worked great together.
What could you garnish that with? You wouldn't want to do croutons. Would you do almonds?
You know, I think that's a textural component. You got a great point. Great point. See, that's my wife. That's my wife. She's picking these things up. She's thinking, wait a minute, there's no texture there. You got spinach, avocado is soft. Spinach, of course, is soft. Strawberries, bananas, and then if you're using peaches, in place of strawberries or in addition to the strawberries, either way, those are all soft. So, yeah, plus it adds another protein. So adding some toasted almonds would be nice. You know what I like if I'm going to use almonds? I like the slivered ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they look like little sticks.
I like the sliced ones.
Oh, gosh. Here we go. There we go. All right. Marital therapy on the air. We have sliced almonds versus slivered almonds.
Okay, well, if you don't do almonds, what about like those dirty French fried onions, the deep fried onions? Would that be a good component on top?
You know, there are times I use those, but they usually fall into barbecue. But we keep, you know, one thing we do is when it comes to croutons or any of those French fried onions, things like that, I always keep those in the freezer. Same with my nuts. Because nuts have oil in them. Oil can get rancid. So I keep all those in the freezer. So when we want to top something, put a little garnish on there, it's just...
And they come up to room temp almost immediately.
There you go. So that's a good one. So that's a spinach salad. And on the peaches, getting back to those quickly, I want to mention a lot of times the thing that kind of puts me off on a peach is the fur. Furriness.
The fuzz. The peach fuzz.
The fuzz, yeah. It's the peach fuzz. Maybe that's the guy thing, but I don't know.
Are you supposed to peel the fuzz off, or do you leave it on?
Well, I mean, a great deal of vitamins and minerals can always be found in the skin. In a potato, it's like 80% of them.
Well, I think, you know, it depends upon what is the toughness of it, because, okay, last week we had that really giant, beautiful peach that was we could eat as straight with a mm-hmm. knife, no peeling it, and it was so delicious. Then we did that little small one that I bought,
yeah.
And it was a tough skin. You couldn't even chew it. It was so tough.
Well, you know what? I think, first off, we do need to be careful whether it's a nectarine. If it doesn't have any fur on it, it's a nectarine, and if it's furry, then it's a peach. But peeling them is very easy, and you can peel them the same way you peel almost everything else, same way you peel a tomato, right? The peel of the tomato is not real good for you. Your body doesn't digest it. It just pretty much starts at one end and works its way through. So, same thing with the peach is what we'll do is we'll take boiling water and you're just going to need some water that's boiling. So if you need a recipe, all right, call us in. But then you need a bowl of ice water and you just drop it in for 3 to 5 seconds, pull it out, put it in the ice water, cool it down. Once it's cooled down, you can just peel it off with your finger. I mean, it will peel the skin will come off like a bar of soap. It will just squeeze right off. So whether it's a tomato or a peach, anything you want to get that peel off, those things works good. And I know that you have a combination that we do and we've done before on strawberries that I made that you really liked. Do you recall what that one was?
Strawberries and balsamic.
And balsamic.
I remember the first time I made that at a job I was working at, and they thought I was crazy. I'm like, no, trust me, balsamic works with strawberries.
Yes, you know, and what we do is we just take, it's 3 to 1. So when we talk about a recipe that's by number like this, we're talking about volume. So or it can even be weight, but it's 3 to 1. So it's 3 parts. So it's 4 to 1. 1 quart of balsamic vinegar to 1 cup of white granulated sugar. So again, 1 quart to 1 cup. You're just going to put that in a saucepan and reduce it by third. So just kind of take a look at where it is in your small little saucepan and just bring it up to a simmer or even a light boil. Let it go down till it's about a third reduced, meaning 2/3 left. Then let that cool, and you're going to end up with this wonderful, wonderful syrup. And I'll tell you, you put that over strawberries, and it's a great dessert because it's also high acid, so it cleanses your taste buds.
Well, and if you don't have the time or the patience, or you go a little too far, like I have with your balsamic reduction, you can go to the store and get some already made. You can get it from your regular grocery store, and Trader Joe's Giotto has a wonderful one.
Yep, Trader Joe's. But you know, you can't get poppy seeds. I was reading an article about this. You can't get poppy seeds in Japan because you can't get poppy seeds because you can't get Trader Joe's everything seasoning because it's got the poppy seeds in it, and then they use it as an opioid. I'm not really sure how that works.
I guess they don't have everything bagels in Japan.
Well, they got almost everything bagels.
Almost everything.
Yeah, almost
not quite everything.
Everything bagels. So anyway, so all right, peaches and strawberries. So we're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and you'll be back with Cal and Krista cooking like a pro.
Hey, Redding, take an inflation vacation with Black Bear Diner's 7 new weekday dinner deals, starting at just $9.99. Tasty fish tacos, creamy fettuccine carbonara, steak and fries, a crispy chicken dinner, beef stroganoff, and more. Serve Monday through Friday after 4 p.m. Escape inflation's grip on your wallet and set the table tonight with good old-fashioned family food at your friendly Black Bear Diner in Redding on Hilltop Drive.
Black Bear Diner.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, or North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
Thirty years ago, Simpson University arrived in Redding with a promise to serve the North State. Warmly welcomed by this far Northern California community, we forged lasting partnerships, serving our neighbors locally as well as globally. Building on our promise, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Our promise to be the gateway to world service begins in our backyard. Learn more about Redding's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
Going back a ways for that one. Hank Williams, wasn't it? Hank Williams.
Not Junior, the original
right.
Hank Williams.
All right. Our engineer extraordinaire, David, gave me the nod, so I guess right on that one. My dad would have got it. My dad would have got that. But anyway, we are back. You've got us here on Cooking Like a Pro with Chef Cal, my wife Krista. Again, you found us on KCNR 1460 AM and 96.5 FM. And again, if you'd like to call, local number 605-4567. Or just check in. You can check in and get us on where else can they get us? See our webpage? And then
it's cookinglikeapropodcast.net. And you can get these recordings on podcast a few days after we do it live.
Can they reach out to us on that other stuff? What is it called? Facebook or
Instagram? I prefer Instagram. If you're going to DM me, do it on Instagram.
Okay. Well, yeah, as long as I don't have to do it on Instagram, because remember, I'm not the techie in this pair. I'm not the techie. But anyway, we also have implemented a class or a segment. Why don't we call it a block, as they call it professionally, I suppose, of cooking skills. And today I want to talk a little bit about poaching. Poaching, something that you really don't see much. Last week we talked about saute, we talked about
breading,
bullfrogs, and jumping, and the beans jump, and how to practice sauteing so you can get a job at the local diner. But poaching is not boiling. Okay, so poaching is going to be a cooking method that isn't really harsh. Boiling would be a harsh, even simmering would be harsh, because you've got the agitation of your cooking liquid. Here we're going to just bring it up to where it's just below a simmer. You can use a temperature gauge, and you can get that gauge set. Just pull it. Now, the people, depending on what you're boiling in, people might be using a pot that's really heavy on the bottom. They could be using a pot that's light. They could be using any number of things. So it's hard to dictate exactly what temp that'll always be, but it should be pretty close. But again, just use a temperature gauge, get it to where it's just simmering, just play with the fire until you get it down there, and then you're ready to go. Now, when we poach items in the restaurant business, and poaching, very, very healthy way to cook, very extremely healthy. You're not adding any oil at all. It's basically generally, we're just going to use what's called, the French call a court bouillon. So it's a bouillon, a court bouillon, and it's going to be a kind of a vegetable stock. It has an amount of acid in it, so you have a acidic component, which is
so
nice.
What do you put in the water? Is it like a mirepoix, celery, onion, carrots? What do you use?
Yeah, do a mirepoix. So maybe I'd better tell everybody what a mirepoix is, since you just threw out a French term.
Mirepoix, celery, and carrots.
Yep, celery.
The French mirepoix. Now, different countries have different, you know, blends. Yeah. We use green bell peppers, but not the French.
Yeah, so basically what you're looking at on your mirepoix is just a standard vegetable flavors that you're going to have. You're going to have those standard flavors, and then you're also going to have your aromatics. And your aromatics are going to be, you know, your parsley, your bay leaf, your thyme, perhaps garlic, peppercorns. So you're making a light water-based broth that is just flavored with, you know, a variety of vegetables and spices, fresh herbs and such. And then you're going to bring that up to just below a simmer. And then you're just going to lay your product in there. And you don't need a lot. I would just suggest that you have enough liquid to cover the top of, let's say you're going to be doing some halibut. I know I'm going to be doing a video on halibut tomorrow, where you just drop it into this liquid, and it slowly cooks, and just want to let it go until it's firm, the same way you would any other way of cooking it. It's no longer it's no longer translucent. It's opaque. Is it opaque or opaque?
Opaque.
Okay.
Now,
well,
so how is poaching different than steaming? So steaming, the water, you're not actually in the water.
Yeah. Steaming is going to be enclosed. Steaming is going to be something that's enclosed. You know, we have a pressure steamer, things that we use at home. So it would have a lid on it, and it would also be up to, and once you put a lid on something, it's going to start boiling really quickly. So keep an eye on that. But generally with the poaching, just below a simmer, a steam is going to cook much faster. Steam is actually the fastest way to cook. It's also the easiest way to burn yourself.
Yeah, steam burns are horrible.
Yeah, well, that's why they have pressure cookers. So that's why you can cook short ribs in 45 minutes. It might take you 3 hours doing it in a different method.
Now, do you ever put your product in a cold water and bring it up to a poach level, or do you do a hot water first?
I would bring it up to temp first, because you're going to want to time the amount of time it takes to cook. So, you know, okay, when I do salmon and it's this big, then it's 7 minutes or whatever the time is. There is a thought, and it's not so much a thought. It was something that they taught us in French cooking school, was to take that cold water has more derivative properties than hot water. So if you're making potatoes, for example, if we're going to boil potatoes, we would start potatoes off, whether you peel them or don't peel them, that's entirely up to you. Like I mentioned, 80% of the nutritional value in a potato is in the peel, so you probably ought to eat it, but other than that, if you just want starch, then there you go. Steam things, it's going to be an enclosed environment. When you're going to, simmer things, it's going to be the water being agitated. And again, talking about poaching, it's going to be just underneath that.
So quick question, what do you poach, and why would you choose a poached item?
Usually I poach seafood. It's more gentle. You know, I poach seafood, salmon, halibut, things like that, shrimp. Most of the time, those are the items you want to go at, because it's going to be a lot more healthy.
Would it toughen up chicken?
Anything would get tough if you overcook it. But no, that normally chicken would be something doesn't have a whole lot of connective tissue to it. So you can go ahead and use a dry cooking method. Poaching is going to fall under the category of wet. Remember, we have dry cooking methods: saute, charbroil, roast, and then we have moist cooking methods: boil, steam, simmer. If you have a tender piece of protein, then you want to have a dry cooking method. So that's why chicken is really good on the char grill. That's why chicken is really good if you saute it. So it's a protein that adapts to a variety of different cooking methods. But you'd have a chance of maybe getting it a little bit tough if you wanted to, if you put it in the water. So I probably wouldn't do that. The main thing we don't want to do is we just don't want to have a lot of poaching liquid because we don't want the flavor to come out. And the easiest way to explain that is, let's say I poach a piece of salmon in a broth. I take it out. It's cooked. It's ready to go. It's nice and healthy and delicious. I'm going to add maybe something to it. Maybe I'm going to add a nice peach compote. Let's put the peach compote on the website so they can get that, because that'd be a great dish too. But if you were to drink that cooking liquid after the salmon comes out of it, what's it going to taste like?
Salmon.
It's going to taste like salmon. So there's been a flavor transfer. There's been flavor that has left the salmon and is no longer in the salmon. It's in the broth. So when I'm thinking about cooking and I'm walking through the different methods and what they're doing to the protein, I always keep that in mind. Am I wasting, flavor by doing something like that? I know we had that cedar plank. Remember the cedar plank salmon we did? So we take the salmon, and you could do any fish. We put it on a little cedar plank, put a little garlic and shallot on top, and then we put it inside a paper bag, a small paper bag, like a little lunch sack. Put a little wood paper clip on there, and just bake it in the oven for 7 to 8 minutes. And when you pull it out, we would open the bag at the table in front of the guest, and they would just get this delicious aroma, everything that was captured inside there. Similar to like coating a fish in mayonnaise. I'm not a real big fan of mayonnaise. I like it on my sandwiches maybe, but for cooking, once you cook mayonnaise, it completely changes the texture of it, the flavor of it, and it locks in that flavor. So there's no chance for a flavor transfer. That salmon or halibut or whatever it is, it's going to taste like that because it's encased. No place for it to go.
And that's called en papillote, right?
En papillote would be, the French would use that for paper. Yes, it was wrapped in paper, in papillote. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They also wrap it in anything. Wrap it in banana leaves. That's something that's very popular, especially in the Asian culture, where they'll wrap something in banana leaves. Again, what you're trying to do is capture as much flavor as you can. That's, I mean, why are you buying it? Why are you spending, $15 a pound for it, $5 a pound for it, $30 a pound for it, and then allowing any of that flavor to leave? So the same reason why you wouldn't want to put a really high flavorful sauce that has a really high flavor profile and put it on filet mignon, because you're just, it's like putting ketchup on steak, right? I mean, unless your steak is shoe leather, then you probably didn't, stay away from the ketchup.
I agree. Although your son might not agree. He puts ketchup on everything.
He used to. But yeah, he's done better. And then also, when you come to this poaching, another thing you can do when we talk about cooking items in a wet cooking method is we have boiling. And I just want to throw this out there. And these are some numbers that you can write down. But this particular number is, I'll give it to my wife. I'll give her credit for it. It's called pasta 1, 2, 3. And do you remember why? I called it that, and then she kind of coined the term. Do you remember that?
I do it all the time. I can't cook my pasta without it. Do you want me to tell them how you do it?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So pasta 1, 2, 3. Because have you ever had somebody cook you pasta and it's all stuck together? Then we need to keep stirring. And after the first minute you've dropped it in the water, you stir it. You hit your timer for 2 minutes, and then you stir it. Then you hit your timer for 3 minutes. and you stir. And if it's a really dense pasta or like a whole wheat pasta, I go 4, 5, and 6.
There you go. Yeah. Either 4, 5, or 6 minutes after that. Pasta should be right around between 11 and 13 minutes from start to finish. Now, not if we're talking about like an angel hair pasta, something super thin, but basically your spaghetti, your rigatoni, your penne, your lasagna noodles, all of those things. They're pretty much always going to take that time, but I can't tell you how many times I've gone somewhere and the spaghetti is stuck together. And I remember how we used to tell spaghetti was done when I was first starting off. I was probably 9 years old, is you take the spaghetti and you throw it onto the ceiling in the kitchen.
Well, we would throw it against the wall.
Yeah. Well, we threw it in the ceiling. I remember looking up there when I was a kid, seeing all kinds of spaghetti stuck to the ceiling. And that's because the starch comes out of it, or at least some of the starch comes to the surface, and it sticks. Once it sticks, it's done. So anyway, cooking like a pro, instead of tossing spaghetti, we're going to go and take a break. Again, you've got us at KCNR 1460 AM, 96.5 FM. Again, cooking like a pro with Chef Cal and Miss Jeff.
Pretend like it's the weekend now. And we can pretend it all the time. And can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside.
Hi friends, RC from Tobacco and Brew with this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Toscano's Master Age Cigars. For all those who enjoy Kentucky fire-cured tobacco comes Toscano's Premium Blend. Micro-fermented, flame-cured, aged, then aged an additional 360 days, all under the daily watch of an affinatore. Some have called this Toscano's Masterpiece. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Hi, this is Cindy at Lauchs Landscape Supply. If you're a contractor, maintenance company, homeowner, or the do-it-yourselfer, Lauchs Landscape Supply is here to help. We offer lots of rental equipment like side cutters, fiber plates, concrete saws, tile saws, stump grinders, trenchers, even our popular mini-skid loader, and so much more that's available to go to work on your next project. We also offer trucking and delivery service of all types of products, whether it's our garden soil or gravel for your home, builder to level up your land, specified products for your commercial project. We offer multiple size trucks, making your load a payload every time, creating the most cost-effective way to get your load, whether you need a half yard or thousands of yards delivered to your job site. Lauchs Landscape Supply is here to help with knowledgeable staff that's ready to work. Find us on the web at LauchsLandscapeSupply.com. Give us a call at 378-2220 or just come see us 7 days a week at the corner of Dersh, Airport, and Churn Creek Road, and check out our store stocked with all the essentials to help make your yard the envy of the neighborhood. Lauchs Landscape Supply, where we take pride in your project.
North Valley Distributing at 3081 Crossroads Drive in Reading is a proud sponsor of Reading Colt 45 Baseball. North Valley Distributing is a major supplier of electrical and electronic products for the industrial and construction markets, featuring services with concentration in industrial automation, lighting, distribution, controls, data communication, solar, and energy solutions. North Valley Distributing, a proud sponsor of Reading Colt 45 Baseball. Call 530-222-1500. That's 530-222-1500.
Oh yeah, we are the champions. Boy, that goes back. I get asked this a lot, so I went ahead and decided to just bring it up. Not kind of get out of the way, but because this is part of who I am as well. But the World Food Olympics happen every 4 years, just like the sporting event, except they don't leave Europe. They actually don't leave Germany. Germany coined the term Culinary Olympics back in 1900 even, so they've always used that. We have a World Cup in Basel, that's in Switzerland, and then we have also we have an America's Cup that's in Chicago every 4 years. But the Olympics themselves have been going on for, well, this is my first time was the 24th Olympiad, so that was in 1996. And I bring it up because it helps kind of inclusively put together where it is that I got the information that I'm blessed to have. My understanding of being able to cook and how to put plates together, and it really just goes to being around some of the best in the world. I mean, and I don't say that lightly. I mean, hands down, the best in the world. And I could give you a big long list of that. But anyway, it's what I, you know, I remember coming back in 96 after we won, our first Olympic gold medal. We were fifth in the world, and I was up here in Reading. The rest of my team was down in Los Angeles area. It's a four-person team. And I remember just some real wise words that came from my the founder of the team and our coach as well, Chef Brad Tolles. And I went back to talk to him because everybody was kind of going crazy on the airplane. It was kind of nuts because of what we had accomplished. But we were in the right place at the right time. But I remember Brad just saying, Cal, you know what? You always got to remember it's always about the journey. And it's that journey. And I think a lot about that journey is like even with you and me, Krista, as a journey as a married couple, you know, our cooking is taking a journey, you know, from where you first started off where you had certain set recipes that you did, where now you can just open up the refrigerator and I can say, what's for dinner? And you can figure it out.
And our first fight was about pot roast.
Well, not every marriage fights about pot roast, but you have to admit I was right because there's no way that thing would have cooked. I mean, it's we've been married 20 years. It still wouldn't be cooked. I'm just joking. But yeah, anyway, so sear it off first. Let's not get into the pot roast discussion. But anyway, so it's a collection of this information. And one of the things that when I look at a plate, and that is a plate of food, when I look at a plate of food, there's just a number of things that go through my mind. And all of these things are based around what I want this final product to be like. So let's go back to a standard plate. So a standard plate is going to have a protein, a starch, and a vegetable. Now, that's changed a lot. A lot of people are not using starches. You know, you can kind of skip the starch if you want and just go with a larger protein and maybe just maybe even a larger amount of vegetables. But the standard is just as a basic to start with is around 40% protein. So that's going to be your meat, fish, your beef, your lamb, duck, whatever. So 40%, and then the rest of the 60% left is going to be half starch, half vegetables. So half starch, I don't know, what are some of your favorite starches?
And my favorite starch is potatoes. My dad was from Idaho.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, we have friends back in Missouri, no, Michigan, somewhere over there, Wisconsin maybe. But they grow a lot of potatoes back there. A lot of potatoes.
Well, the potato is so versatile. You know, rice, you just got to cook it in water. Potatoes, you can cook it in water. You can bake them. You can roast them. You can grill them. You can, they're just so versatile.
Yeah, you know, and they take a lot of flavor. You can do a lot with them. You know, loaded potatoes, whipped potatoes. You can throw anything in a whipped potato. I always like a little chive and goat cheese in my potato. Of course, butter, sour cream, all that stuff that we're, you know, the doctor tells us. You know, I like to eat a dish that I like to feel my arteries harden while I'm eating it, right? So, I mean, I want, you know, something that's like, it's got butter, it's got cream.
If it needs that,
then let's just let it have it. And if I want to eat healthy or something different, I'll go a different direction. I won't put a potato on there. But
so with plating, but, you're talking about having meat as your center of the plate.
Yeah, center of the plate. A lot of times they used to call it, what was it? It was 3-6-9 for your vegetables at 3 o'clock. This is the old time cooking. Back in the 70s, this is that kind of how we did it, where your 3 o'clock portion of your plate, if you imagine the face of a clock, from 12 to 3 would be your vegetables, from 9 to 12 would be your starch, and then your protein would be in front of
well,
you.
Well, this is something I had to learn from you, because most people in today, their food doesn't touch. And you taught that you start stacking foods that go well together to create height and to give visual appeal.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe we can get someone to call in and tell us that or shoot a message to us on Facebook or Instagram. Because I don't know why you don't want your food to touch. Because to me, the whole plate should make sense. The whole plate should come together. If I don't want cream spinach to be, you know, served with my, you know, roasted red snapper, then don't put it on there. Just use something different because it's all going down the same tank, right? You're picking up with your utensil and it's all going in the same place. So why wouldn't you want it to have that harmony of being able to be married together?
Well, maybe you're talking about other dishes that they didn't go well together. I used to, you know, grow up, I would eat just one thing on my plate, then I would move the next thing on my plate, then I'd move the next thing on my plate. I wouldn't mix them.
You're too organized. You're too organized.
Well, now yeah. I just mix it all together.
Yeah. Well, it's all good. You know, again, it is one of those things that is just a starting point. We start with that, and then we kind of start thinking about, okay, what are the other considerations that we need? One of them you mentioned earlier, mouthfeel, right? A textural component. When I'm eating something, to say I'm eating cream, spinach, mashed potatoes, and meatloaf, well, there's nothing on there that has a textural component that's going to add any sort of resistance when I eat it. So now maybe this is where your fried onions might come into play and be a nice garnish.
Especially
it'd be a nice flavor,
meatloaf, yeah.
but it would add texture to it. So a texture component. So we think about that. When I eat this dish, well, how's it going to feel in my mouth? Is it going to have those different things? Mention the harmony. Also, the harmony of the ingredients, they do need to come together. You know, the flavors need to appear well together. Basically, there needs to be a theme. You know, like, for example, if we're doing barbecue, we have barbecue chicken, we have baked beans, and we have corn on the cob, right? So we have these basic things that work. They harmonize well together. Those items go well together. That may be more of a historical thing, just simply because that's kind of how it barbecue, you know, condiments kind of started with your sides.
Well, I go by, you know, tonight I want chicken, or I go two ways. Either I pick my protein first or I pick my ethnicity first.
Okay.
I'm thinking Chinese tonight. Okay, so if we're going the Chinese route, you're going to want Chinese ingredients. You're not going to throw a bunch of Mexican in with it, right?
True.
So that's how I go. So, you know, what ethnic route do I want to take? And then, am I feeling fish? Am I feeling chicken? Am I feeling beef? Am I feeling like dessert?
You know, and this is where you need to go back to your culinary notebook. Your culinary notebook. And as we talked about in the first segment, first block, have those items, those flavor components, those flavor items that just go well together, that really help each other out. It's one of those things you really want. You want to write that down in your little notebook, because that is something that you're looking for as well. Also the color. Now, color is not – here's something that I see a lot. Well, people might make a salad and say it needs red, so let's put a tomato on it. Well, maybe it doesn't need a tomato, because maybe it's a vinaigrette dressing, so it already has acid. So why would you add a tomato that's acidic to a salad that's already going to have a high acid content? So it's kind of just thinking about, but, and again, this isn't what we all do. I do it, but because I was trained this way. But again, these are just when you put together a plate, you put together dinner, these are some of the things that you might want to consider.
Well, give us a taste. Okay, I made meatloaf tonight. Okay, what would you do? If I just said we're having meatloaf, how would you build that plate? What would you put with it?
Well, I'd go with items that, first off, that are fresh and seasonal. I'd always look at that. And now you are getting greens. So you're getting your greens, you know, things that I was raised with, you know, chard, any variety of chards, you know, leafy spinach, a lot of different leafy green vegetables. First off, those are where you're going to get your, all of your, what was that green stuff? Chlorophyll, right? So, you know, it's going to contribute to something that you need. And then, you know, but again, mashed potatoes are something that goes well. Maybe you add a contextual component to it. Maybe instead of mashed potatoes, how about if we just go with grits? You know, or if instead of using grits being white cornmeal, use regular cornmeal and make it polenta. So in either way, it's still going to be a starch. And it's going to give you something that has a little bit of texture to it, too.
And so, then you're also going to need a sauce.
A sauce,
and
yes.
What would you do for garnish?
Yeah, well, sauce is just generally going to go with a barbecue sauce of some sort, but you can go with anything, you know. Remember our first show a couple weeks back?
Mm-hmm.
Look that up. That information is online. You can go online and get that. And I think we named off about 10,
mm-hmm.
maybe 10, 9 or 10 different barbecue sauces.
One of the barbecue sauces is the one that I make using ketchup and salsa. because it's just, I didn't have a particular barbecue sauce, and that's what I threw together, and it toasts up so well on the top of that meatloaf.
There you go. Bacon's always a good one, too. So maybe bacon, some little crispy bacon pieces on top just to complete your meal and add that texture. Also, the size of the ingredients, you know, the workmanship is also something. Being very precise when you plate your ingredients. We even look at the way it flows. Is something sliced on the plate? Is it flowing towards you like it should, or is it flowing away from you? I see a lot of countries that make that error. That's a pretty simple one to not do. And it should look good. The presentation should look good. You should be able to tell whether it's a hot presentation, whether it's a cold presentation. Hot being items are kind of piled together in the middle, where a cold food presentation, things have a little bit of a separation to them. And again, does it look like I want to eat it? You know, one of the things that does it evoke emotion? Does it look like it's going to be flavorful? And one of the things that you'll hear me say a lot, and this is really going back to the beginning of this segment, as far as what made the difference when we were able to win a gold medal in the World Cooking Olympics in 96, do I want to stick a fork in it? You want to stick a fork in it, folks. If you want to stick a fork in it, you're in the right spot. So anyway, Cooking Like a Pro, we'll be right back after this break. KCNR, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Reading.
Come celebrate the 40th anniversary of the veteran-owned sandwichery at 1341 Tehama Street in downtown Reading. This mom-and-pop restaurant has been serving up delicious, quick, and fresh, made-to-order sandwiches with generous portions at a great price for 40 years. Enjoy a club sandwich, pastrami corned beef, a Californian with turkey, avocado, and cheese, an egg salad sandwich, roast beef, chicken salad, and I'm getting hungry just thinking about it. They also have vegetarian sandwiches and much more. Plus, hot dogs and homemade soups, potato salad, and big bakery-style cookies. Sandwichery is also a destination featuring unique World War II decor with inside dining and outside shaded patio seating. Sandwichery, celebrating their 40th anniversary this July. Open Monday through Friday from 10 to 2 at 1341 Tehama Street in downtown Reading. Sandwichery, dine in or take out. Call 530-246-2020. That's 530-246-2020.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel has a full-service organization with departments staffed with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Susan Eastman, financial advisor, Stifel Nicolaus. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Give me a call at 530-244-7199. Again, 530-244-7199.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Well, there you go. All right. That sounds like some serious food preaching right there.
That could go good with that meatloaf.
Oh, there you go. Hey, so this last segment, this block, we want to spend some time with you. And again, we appreciate those that are listening out there. We want to spend some time during wine on this segment. I know we talked a little bit about that last couple of weeks as well. We like to cover a different varietal because there's a lot of them out there and more every day. But varietal is simply the type of grape. And the laws change a little bit here and there. They're different places of the world, different places even of the state, areas that they have that they grow the grapes in. But they are a little bit different as far as the amount of that varietal that needs to be in that bottle in order for it to be called that varietal. And I'll explain that, that if it's Cabernet Sauvignon from Napa Valley, then 80% of it, or whatever that percentage is now, 80% it has to be Cabernet, and it has to be from Napa Valley. The other 20% can be anything that they want. And there's wine is very recipe-based. It's going to be based on its ingredient, first off and foremost. But then after that, depending on what the growing season was, if we had nice, long, warm summer evenings and those grapes really had a chance to develop and to just become more and more flavorful as far as the varietal that they are. And in this case, I want to talk about Chardonnay. So you got these wonderful, beautiful grapes that have been growing. Then they get picked, and then you have to look at, okay, how much of this Chardonnay am I going to use? How much percentage of these grapes am I going to use in there? And if I even want to call it that. Because if you see a bottle of wine on the shelf, and for example, it's a white wine, it says California, or a red wine for that matter, but it says like the state, Oregon, then that means that those grapes could have came from anywhere in that state. So if you want a wine that's a little more higher quality of that varietal flavor, then you're going to want to pick one that has that varietal. So there's a lot of ways to get information. They didn't have, the internet when I first started, doing wine, because remember, I'm Italian, so we started a little bit earlier than most people. But there's a lot of places you can get information on wine. And where's one of the first places you look, Krista? Because you actually go and shop for wine, to be honest, more than I do.
The first thing I do is I look at the price tag.
There we go, price tag. Well, the price is going to make a difference. I mean, a $3 bottle of wine is not going to be as good as a $15
bottle
of
wine. Well, okay, so when you're standing in the grocery store line, where I like to go to Trader Joe's a lot, they have a great selection. The cheapest is usually on the bottom, the most expensive is on the top shelf, right? So I usually go middle shelf.
All right.
And so from there, am I thinking red? Am I thinking white after I'm looking at price? And then what type of varietal do I want specifically? Do I want something drier? Do I want something sweeter, something lighter, something stronger?
So when you're standing there at Trader Joe's and you're staring at the wall and you're looking at the wines, what's something that you want to get information on? Because remember, sometimes they'll have a little tag there that says, it goes great with beef, flavors of raspberry and boysenberry. And
once you get past the label, you can turn it around and look at, are there tasting notes? Some of the best wines will have a tasting note that the winemaker has determined what should you be tasting in that particular bottle that they've prepared for you.
Very good. Yeah, well, if they can't get it right, then probably no one can. So if you get a white wine, let's say you get a Chardonnay, and the back of the bottle says you should be able to get pineapple or other types of citrus, or maybe it says you should be getting some butter, or maybe some toastiness. The toastiness in wines comes from the inside of the barrel that the wine is stored in. A lot of wine, especially the lesser expensive wines, of course, are those are aged or at least produced out of stainless steel. If a wine is seen any time in a barrel, then it's had time for the inside flavors of that toast off the barrel. And that also depends on the wood. French oak is going to be better than American oak. And, I probably get a barrel guy to argue that with me. But again, you get what you pay for. And when you use a barrel and you take the staves and you retoast it for a new wine, you're going to get more and more of that toast off of that.
Well, let's talk about Chardonnay. So a lot of whites are done in stainless steel. Chardonnay, you talk about being an oak. Do they ever switch it to stainless steel, or is it always an oak?
Oh, yeah. Well, again, and they might be using some Chardonnay and then something else. Maybe the Chardonnay is maybe they use malolactic fermentation, which is going to give it a lactate, a real buttery flavor. So they want to add a little more fruit to it. So maybe they're going to add a little bit of Sauvignon Blanc to maybe make it a little more on the spicier side, or maybe they're going to add some Riesling or Gewürztraminer to add maybe some tree fruit to it. So it kind of depends on what the winemaker is the chef. So if you look at it that way, the winemaker is the chef. He's in the field. He's going to produce what he produces. But again, they always can change and add different ingredients. Some people might say that's kind of bastardizing the process, but yeah, it depends on what they want as a final product. If they're just going to use that that varietal that's grown, that's produced, that's smashed, that's juiced, that's bottled at some point, then, you know, they're saying that well, at least hopefully, it was a very good growing year. So the grapes had a chance to develop. Just like a tomato, we get a tomato that comes from Mexico, and you can look on the box. They have to tell you where this stuff comes from, folks. You get a tomato from Mexico, and it probably tastes a lot like the cardboard box it was shipped in, right? Okay, but if I go over to Mom and Dad's house and I get a tomato right off the vine, or I pick one when ours finally start turning red, it's completely different.
It tastes like the vine.
Yeah, it's night and day. So that's the best way to look at your wines also. It's, you know, garbage in, garbage out. I mean, you get what you start with. You're not going to be able to take really lousy ingredients and get something sensational out of it.
Now, talk about Chardonnay. Chardonnay is not, I mean, I am a white wine drinker, but Chardonnay is not on the top of my list because it's so dry. It can be a touch bitter. What would you pair that with to make it a little bit more enjoyable for people like me?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's going to depend on which type of Chardonnay that you have. I mean, if you have one that's going to be a little bit drier, then maybe you want to go with, you know, I mean, when you say dry, dry as in, you know, a toastiness from the oak, that would probably where that kind of flavor would come from. And then I'd either want to do contrast or similarity. I'd want to match that with the food that it would go well with. Let's say I had a food that I wanted to cleanse my palate with. So every time I take a bite of this fresh grilled halibut, then I take a little sip of that wine and I get that nice little marriage together. So it's going to go well together. Or if it's a contrast, then it would be the opposite. Again, we mentioned last week going with a sweeter wine for a more spicy dish.
How would like a chicken piccata go with a Chardonnay?
Oh, it'd go well. I mean, chicken piccata, first off, is a cream sauce. Okay, and piccata is going to have capers in it. That's going to add an acid component. But it's a lemon cream sauce when you're making it, if you're making it in traditional French style. So you got that creaminess. So if you want to cut through that, then a Sauvignon Blanc, a wine that's higher in acid. A Viognier would be a good choice as well.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, I know you like the Viognier. Yes. So, but that Viognier, that high acid wine is going to cut through that cream of the piccata, and it's going to cleanse your palate. So you're going to be able to enjoy every bite as opposed to just having literally so much cream you can't taste anything. Because remember, that's why wine and cheese can be a little bit difficult, because dairy coats your tongue. So as soon as you take a bite of something with cream sauce, maybe in this case a chicken piccata, and you get that nice creamy sauce in there, your tongue's coated, so you need something to clean that off. And a Sauvignon Blanc, a Viognier, a Chenin Blanc, which would be like a Fumé Blanc, Robert Mondavi, who is no longer with us. He signed a wonderful picture for me. I have to get that. I think we have that at home, yeah. But just a wonderful man, wonderful man. But literally just a pioneer in Napa Valley for winemaking of all types.
Well, something that also helps me grow in a flavor is to have a blend. And we do have a local winery that makes a Chardonnay Viognier blend. And so it's kind of helping me lean towards Chardonnay, even though Chardonnay is not one of my favorites.
Yeah, well, we have a bunch of local wineries. We really do. I highly would recommend going out and looking at some of those. I know we have Mosley's that we've been at numerous times. You just went to Matson Vineyards.
That's
they also
the one
have a lot of wines as well. But there are local. I think there's within the Appalachian, I think we've got a lot. I want to say there's like 30 or something or 40 just up here. You know, people think about the wine country being, you know, the Napa, Sonoma area. But, you know, Oregon for Pinot Noirs, Washington, former Lowe's.
Again, Paso Robles is really becoming a hot spot for wine, too.
Very good. And if you put your finger on Napa Valley on a globe and you spin the globe, you're going to go right to the middle of France, actually around Burgundy. So you can see that it's just a good growing region because of its longitude and its latitude, you know. And when we have a dear friend of ours that actually makes wine up in Jingletown. And so you can make it. We got grapes growing all over our property, but I don't think
we're getting any wine.
Yeah, I don't think we're getting wine out of it. I'm not sure. I think the chickens are gonna eat it all. But anyway, so a Chardonnay, you want to look at either a similar food or a contrast in food. Make notes, take notes. As my wife mentioned, the label tells you a lot. they put a lot of work, a lot of effort, and a lot of cost. The making of the label costs more than the bottle, and the bottle costs more than the grapes. Okay, so or the juice rather. So, you know, a lot. There should be pretty correct information on the bottle.
But we
as well.
Need to not forget, we actually have a wine pairing guide on Culinarily Yours.
Oh, we do. Yeah, they can get that for free, huh?
Yeah, they can get that for free.
All right, so they can go to cookinglikeapropodcast.net, and you can get the again. There's a food and wine pairing guide that we put together to help answer some of your questions on there. But then again, there's a plethora of information now that they somebody invented the internet, something called the internet. You can kind of look up.
Yeah, and if you don't have tasty notes on the back of your bottle, very often they will have those online on their particular wipes for the winery.
You know, and you can even, if you get a wine you really like, you can soak the bottle in water and pull that label off and then put that label in maybe your wine tasting book. And, you know, that way you always remember that's going to be something you can go back to, and that's going to be a win-win-win. So we appreciate you listening to us here with Chef Cal and Miss Chef Krista DiMercurio on Cooking Like a Pro, KNCR 1460 AM, 96.5 FM, every Wednesday at 5 o'clock. Look forward to talking to you next week. Have a wonderful day and a wonderful rest of your week. God bless you.
KCNR, Shasta Redding.